Hello, you're listening to Out of the Canon. I'm Jeff Glees.
And I'm Adam Richmond.
It's lovely to be here again. Thanks for tuning in once more.
We're already arguing.
Only off camera.
Oh, it's all this Batman nonsense. Batman, this, Batman the other. Yeah. I'm sick of it.
Speculation in inverted commas. due to the, what we thought was success, depending on how exactly you define success, of the last two episodes, we thought we'd carry on going through Adam's big bumper bag scrapbook of little green tickets from yesteryear.
I think we were going to mix them up in between normal episodes, but we haven't done enough preparation. We haven't seen enough.
We've been busy, haven't we? We've been working on lots of projects stuff, haven't we?
I mean, you've seen Django Unchained and I've seen Stoker, but I don't want to talk about Django Unchained.
Stoker.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, I haven't.
You saw Django Unchained.
I did see Django Unchained
last night.
It's unfair
that I get to say what I think about it, but you're not allowed to say.
What, Stoker?
No, you're not.
Oh, Django Unchained.
Yeah, no one's ever going to know what you think about it.
Well, I think it would
be... it's never going to go on record what you think about it, unfortunately.
Well, that's I was going to say it could have been like, a good follow-up to that Tarantino one we did a while ago.
Yeah, I figured. I reckon maybe we'll when it comes out on DVD or.
Do you want to do a DVD celebration?
Yeah,
and I'll watch it again, and decide what I really think of it.
Yeah, it probably deserves another watch. And
it's one of those films that does warrant a podcast, I think.
Focused. Okay, we'll do that when it comes out.
All right, cool. Well, you look forward to that, listeners.
So yeah, Stoker. You could. I love Park Chan Wook.
Director you of do. Old, Who doesn't?
Old Boy, yeah. Sympathy for Lady Vengeance. And all the others. This is... foreign film directors tend to fumble their first English language film.
Uh-huh.
I wouldn't say fumbled it, but it's not particularly... It's not a massive success.
Right. Who wrote the script?
Oh. A guy who was in Prison Break. A guy called Wentworth Miller.
He was in Prison Break?
Yeah. He's just in it. He's an
not
actor.
On it. No, actually in it.
He was in it. He was on Prison Break. There's a story about how he released the script without his name on it because he wanted people to take him seriously.
Yeah.
And then as soon as he got signed up, Roddy Barber. I did this. I did this.
Okay.
So it's like, you fucking phony.
There's a lot of buzz about it.
But it looks great. It's really well put together, but it's empty. The script is very, very empty.
Oh dear.
I know, it's a shame, but I could see why he maybe did it.
I also watched Silver Linings Playbook.
Very good.
Yeah,
I like that.
I'd like to talk about that in another podcast context, though. But
things we're not talking about in today's podcast.
Yeah, well, that was just good to remind our viewers that we're still out there, even though we're very busy, aren't we? We have a lot of important things to do, but when we can, we're still staying diligent. I mean, obviously Adam always is, but I'm doing my best to keep up with your latest trends in the cinematograph.
And just in this case, this episode, we're going to go back to 2000.
Yeah, which,
little supplemental. Two films were missed off, 1999.
Oh, yeah.
These tickets,
yep.
I found them in amongst the others. Don't worry. So we've got missed out Bowfinger.
Bowfinger. I saw that in New York. And in New York, you have like these multiplex cinemas. In America. It was like in a big shopping mall. So we went in, but we were like 15 minutes late. So we just sort of went in, having missed the first 15 minutes.
That's it.
And then, then when the film was over, we walked out. And we were saying about, it's annoying we missed the beginning. And then this guy coming out was like, hell, that one there just started. And so we just went into the screen next door and saw the first 15 minutes after the fact. But load of drivel.
This begins quite well. Steve Martin wrote that.
Did he?
Yeah.
Oh, God bless him.
There's some quite funny jokes. The beginning's really good when Eddie Murphy's playing that live wire mental version of his Hollywood
self. Don't remember that.
But then it really peters out after about 20 minutes.
Uh-huh.
Forget it.
You look really sad.
Yeah. And then the other film, this was from Cinema City of Norwich, the independent cinema of that time. Went to see The War Zone.
What the hell's that?
Which was directed by Tim Roth and starring Ray Winstone.
Well, I've never heard of that. I didn't know Tim Roth had ever done a picture.
Yeah, he's done a picture. It's quite hard going. It's about familial abuse.
Right.
I mean, the kind of the funniest thing about it, it's not a funny film, but watching it, it was quite an empty screening, middle of the day, and you kind of find out, spoiler alert, if you don't want to find out what happens, skip this for a bit.
Well, that doesn't count with me, though.
No, you won't. You won't. Oh, okay.
No, I won't watch it.
No, it's very... I don't... It's kind of interesting, but it's very... It's a real downer. But anyway, well, I won't say what happens, but I'll say what the man in the cinema started screaming at the screen 5 minutes towards the end.
Of what? In terror? No. In anger?
No, I'll tell you the words he started to scream. Okay. He started screaming at the screen... He's fucking her up the arse. He's fucking her up the arse. You know, I was a young man. I put me on edge somewhat for the end of the film. It's a long, laborious film. It's quite stately and well made and well acted. And you're just sort of it's slow, and you're sort of slowly getting sucked into this family drama, and it's reaching this climax, and this you're finally getting somewhere. And this fucking guy just completely killed it. And also made me kind of worry I was going to get stabbed in the face or something.
Yeah, I mean, if there's a lesson to be learned there, it's probably don't go and see a film in Norwich, where clearly people are absolute psychopaths.
Well, you know, let's be clear. That was the only time that happened, and I went, as evidenced, for my three of the years. I was at Norwich, and I went to see 150
films. No, well, fair enough, you had no choice.
One out of 150... I would say 150 films, practically.
Nevertheless, though, that doesn't happen in this country.
No, it was really... I think he was deeply upset by the film, and he felt he had to vocalise it.
Who, though?
Yeah, exactly.
A projectionist?
We all can see what's happened. So anyway, that's 1999.
Great.
And now I'm going to open up my envelope. I've separated them all out.
Okay.
So we've got just 2000.
Lovely.
And I've tried not to look at them
too
closely. I want to go in fresh.
Yeah.
As fresh as you.
Just like that guy that fucked that girl up the arse.
Yeah. Oh, poor Tim Roth. anyway, so let's go. 2000. 4th of January. That's how early I saw this.
Right.
Mystery Men.
Don't know what that is.
You don't know what Mystery Men is?
Sorry.
Oh, fuck, man. It's a good film. Ben Stiller. Who else is in it? It's a parody of comic book heroes.
Right.
It's sort of Kick-Ass before Kick-Ass existed. But it's more comedic than Kick-Ass.
Right.
They all play... William H. Macy's in it. They all play rubbish superheroes.
Right.
Janine Garofalo's in it. And she plays the bowler.
What is this? Is this a Kevin Smith film or something?
Oh, it sounds like it, but it's actually good, so...
Oh! Yeah. Zing!
I think it was based on the Dark Horse comic was supposed to be a lot darker, and then they ended up with a director who went on to do Scooby-Doo, and this one's not that shit, but it's quite bright, and Ben Stiller plays, he's sort of like a really shit Hulk. He never really hulks out, but he sort of gets angry,
right?
And he's supposed to get super strong, and it's like a textbook Ben Stiller, who he is in every single film. But at that point, it wasn't that tiresome. It's sort of overlong, and Jeffrey Rush plays the baddie.
Okay.
But there's some really...
Coming off the back of Shine, was it?
It was probably coming off the back of that. He really, you know, he eats the scenery, chews the scenery.
Yeah,
he's
very
funny. Yeah, I kind of like it. It's good.
Okay,
I think it's got quite a cult following.
Right.
It's always nice to see Janine Garofalo, isn't it?
It was, yeah.
Yeah, no, yeah.
I mean, you know, I don't know how much there was you could get out of her in the long run, but yeah, she's good.
Snarky sinister.
She's always the same character.
But, yeah, no.
I mean, and now we have Aubrey Plaza. So, who needs Janine Garofalo?
Let's all wistfully think about Aubrey Plaza.
I'm trying to not do that at the moment. It's like my new addiction.
Moving on, so you haven't seen that. I would recommend anyone see Mystery Men.
Okay. Entertaining?
Yeah, it's very funny and it's kind of silly.
Anyone big in comedy that worked on that? You know, directing or writing?
I don't know necessarily who wrote it. The biggest people who are funniest people, they're in it. They're the actors.
Like, right.
Stiller.
Uh-huh.
Macy's very good.
Yeah.
And then there's, I don't know, some other people in it. But you know, it's good. It really, really tanked. They spent a lot of money on it because they had to create the effects.
Yeah.
Sort of close to what you'd get in a superhero film.
Yeah.
But it was a kind of a low... It's kind of a small, lo-fi comedy.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, it lost a lot of money because people didn't really want it. It was very ahead of its time, I'd say.
Okay.
Right, so...
I'll check that one out. Oh, no, I love superheroes.
4 days later, I saw Sleepy Hollow.
Ah!
Now, you like that film.
I do. I haven't seen it in a while, but it's always sort of stuck in my mind as the one Tim Burton film that I like. I think it has... genuine sort of gripping atmosphere to it that's lacking in most of his other films. And the story is something... It's a pretty basic story.
Very basic.
Yeah, but that's where he often falls down with his stories. It's like...
What, too much or what?
Even Edward Scissorhands, which I watched over Christmas, it's like everyone lauds it as this amazing film, but the story doesn't really make any sense. Like, the characters do things that don't make a lot of sense. And the ending is, I thought, deeply unsatisfactory. And that, see, it's, you know, when you go back and look at it, it's like, well, that's because it's an incredibly convoluted story from what was just basically a really nice, simple idea. It almost could have been a short film or something.
Is it convoluted? He just comes into town, falls in love with Winona Ryder. Everyone, like, thinks he's a hero, but then everyone turns against him.
I know, but you're never quite sure, like, he's not a malevolent character. But then he kind of is.
Is
like
he?
He's kind of presented as one.
No, he's, yeah, but that's how everyone sees him. He's not malevolent, is he? He's a simple-hearted boy with a scissors for hands.
Android thing. Yeah, I don't know. It doesn't... It's kind of a bit too much. And the same goes for Beetlejuice as well.
Yeah.
It's a bit fucking full-on. And I'm not... Like, I know people love those films. I'm not saying they shouldn't.
No.
But to me, Sleepy Hollow is one that was... It was much easier to just go along for the ride and enjoy... some of that Tim Burton style, which is usually something that's, you know, overly rammed in your face by the time that, you know, people of our age get to our age.
I don't know. I saw Edward Scissorhands at the cinema when I was very young, mm-hmm. and I remember, you know, it making me cry.
When you're young and you haven't seen anything like it before.
But yeah, Sleepy Hollow, like, Johnny Depp's insufferable in that.
Is
Why does he play that character so wet, like, fainting at blood? And that's when he starts going, I don't know, it's very hollow. Sorry.
Brilliant.
There's some nice bits in it.
And did it make you sleepy as well?
Yeah, fuck, I can't believe I missed that. Yeah, it's kind of okay, I suppose.
Yeah,
it's certainly
I
his
think
least
it's pretty good.
Bad film.
It's the easiest one to get into, and considering the kind of things he's doing nowadays, it's a shame he didn't perhaps stick to projects similar to that, rather than these bizarre remakes of other people's ideas.
I see that as the beginning of the end. I think they're just an extension of Sleepy Hollow. Sleepy Hollow did Bonza at the box office, and Alice in Wonderland and Drivel Like That are just extensions of Sleepy Hollow.
Sweeney Todd.
Just
Charlie in the Chocolate Factory.
All look and no substance, which is not even a figure of speech.
Well, yes, you made it your own.
All
which is always important.
And no substance. All right, yeah, I kind of liked it, but not really. I wouldn't recommend anyone ever see it.
Would yeah, you? Well, no, I don't give him the respect of watching any of his films. Fuck Tim Burton. So
yeah.
Sick of it.
Yeah, and then, well, this is a Tim Burton hater.
Uh-huh.
Kevin Smith.
Oh, yeah.
Dogma.
Ah, yes.
Did we talk about Dogma? Did I watch it in 1999?
Maybe.
I think I watched it at the end of 1999.
Yeah.
I saw it twice.
Okay, so
there
that
you go.
One.
Well, I loved Kevin Smith at that age.
Uh-huh.
Well,
Clerks, you know, respect
yeah.
where it's due.
But yeah, Dogma doesn't really...
It definitely doesn't stand up now, but
no.
I did enjoy it.
We definitely covered that.
Yeah.
Now, American... This could be
American
anything.
History X,
American
Pie.
I should have really figured out which American that was.
Yeah, you should have done.
It's probably American...
American Splendor.
Forget it.
No, I think that came out later.
So now we're onto the beach.
Oh!
The
beach.
The Alex Garland book. Danny Boyle film directed.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was, you know, pretty much from the Trainspotting team.
Mm-hmm.
Ewan McGregor was... You know, he was going to be in it.
He was,
and then he got kicked off it.
It would have been probably quite good in that role. I was a huge fan of the novel when it was on the bestseller list. my stepsister gave it to me for Christmas to encourage me to read, and I absolutely loved it. I thought it was a really, really good book, and it really felt like it was written for someone like me, who would be a teenager, you know, in the late 90s. I was very excited to hear they were doing a film adaptation of it. Danny Boyle seemed like a good choice. When I heard that Ewan McGregor was going to be in it, I was happy. Then they said, no, Leonardo DiCaprio is coming on board.
Well, yeah, he wanted, as soon as he wanted to come on board, producers were like, okay, yeah, he's coming. Because yeah. As soon as that happens, he ensures
it's going to make deal. Money. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that was like post-Titanic.
Yeah, well, it's a shame though, because now when I look at, any really recent Leonardo DiCaprio performance, I just think he's such an amazing actor, and I fucking love the guy. So, but back then, I didn't feel that way. I liked The Basketball Diaries.
But then, well before.
Yeah, as he got older, I couldn't stand him. And I was really upset that because I felt like the character is so intrinsically English. He's like, he's this English middle-class guy who's living in some suburb somewhere. And he's just bored. And that's what motivates the whole rest of the story. And the idea that he gets to paradise, but he's incapable of dealing with it because it's not who he is at the end of the day, was really, really strong. In the film, you don't get so much of that. You know, he's this cocky, incredibly handsome guy who just sort of doesn't give a shit. And that was annoying. Also, they took out the character of Jed as well, which is, he's kind of the... how do you put it? Well, he's the mentor, you know. He's the one that's, indicting... what's his name, the character? I can't remember his name. The main character. Sorry about that. He's Richard. He's indicting Richard into this
indicting.
World.
You mean, he's inducting?
That's what I said. Listen properly. he's inducting
Don't
him into this world that, and he's because they're both into Vietnam films and stuff. So he's the one that sort of ends up sending him down the wrong path. And
I think it's a classic example. It's a very good example of. A film that's kind of spoiled by the budget that it ended up getting. And it ended up getting that budget because Leonardo DiCaprio came on board. As soon as he comes on board, the film immediately becomes a bigger film. It's immediately going to get more money spent on it. And as soon as it becomes has a bigger budget, it has to become less interesting. It has to become less...
Why do you think that is, though?
Because the film has to be assured to make that money back, and it can't spook prospective viewers. Well, this is pure.
Well, here's the ending in the book. This is monstrous.
Yeah, this is studio thinking. That's how they think, and they're like, "Well, we've got Leonardo DiCaprio in it. Well, it's got to be this kind of film. It's got to be a Leonardo DiCaprio type film. We can sell it to young, teenage girls, teenage girls,
and me,
and you, and so immediately changes the dynamic of the film. Like, he ends up with the hot French girl.
Yeah, make a whole big thing of that. In the book, it's all.
It's so nice that he doesn't end up with her. That's a really nice take on it. And then it becomes this really boring. Oh yeah, the guy's got to get the girl in the film. It's well, fuck off. No, he doesn't.
Well, yeah, because also it's really. He shouldn't have even got off with her in the first place. That's the whole point. That's the start of him fucking up. It's not, and then he shouldn't get rewarded by getting to be with her. It doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel morally right. It's
in the book, his kind of him being besotted with her turns him sour.
Yeah, and her boyfriend is a really nice guy as well. Yeah.
Oh man, that really spoke to me that bit.
Yeah, but that's why in the book he realizes that, and he's like, I'm a fucking arsehole, and you go on this journey with him, but. In the film, he's just kind of like, oh, come on, god dang it.
But Danny Boyle didn't. He kind of went along with it. He fell out with Ewan McGregor as a result, and then he wasn't happy. He realised that he doesn't want to make that kind of film afterwards.
Really?
Yeah.
There was an impact on that one.
Yeah, massively. He kind of realised that, I want to make smaller films and then be under my control. Like, Slumdog Millionaire was a, pretty small film. And so was 127 Hours. Sunshine looks... The money is all on screen. It doesn't... It's not a huge budget. Mm-hmm. And that's... I think that's kind of cool. I like him. I like Danny Boyle.
I really like Sunshine.
Yeah.
And I remember the trailers looking really, uninteresting and just kind of overblown. But a friend of mine gave me the DVD and just made me promise him I'd watch it. And yeah, really fucking like that film. I think it's brilliant.
Yeah, he's good. So yeah, I'm looking forward to his next one, which is coming out soon.
What's called that?
Trance.
I haven't heard of that.
James McAvoy's in it. If you read anything about it,
okay.
Don't read anything about
it. I won't.
Okay.
Take note, listeners.
Don't read anything about it.
I'm already annoyed that I know James McAvoy's in it.
What's your beef on him?
Oh, what is he good for?
I don't like the fact that he's sort of everywhere, but I think he can be very, very good.
I quite liked The Last King of Scotland, but I don't think... like, he rarely adds anything to it.
He's very good in Atonement.
He's all right, but he's ever have these memorable performances that stick with
him.
He's like an everyman.
He's bubbling under.
He's sort of like a modern-day Hugh Grant.
Oh, no, come on now. He's got more shades of whatever to that.
I don't know if that's true.
Have you seen, like, he used to...
If you're listening, Sir Hugh...
But when first time I saw him was in a little British sitcom called Early Doors.
Uh-huh.
And... he's just
sort of like the original two packets of lager.
No. It's written by Craig Cash. It's sort of like the
Craig Cash,
the royal family.
That's Johnny Cash's wayward nephew.
It's like the royal family, but set in a pub, and it's excellent. Okay. And James McAvoy's in the first series, and then after that, he went on and he was in the first series of Shameless, uh-huh. And everyone
he was fantastic. That's, yeah, good in that. Point.
Like
yeah.
He's, it's just when he's in bigger stuff. As soon as you're in bigger stuff, the thing that was made you good and why you were spotted, it slowly gets taken away and you get kind of the edges taken off you.
Well, there's loads of good actors out there who have, you know, the more opportunity they get, the bigger chance to shine.
Well, look at Fassbender.
Well, yeah. So three instant examples that stick out in my mind. In fact, four, let's say. English, you know, sort of foppish guys who have hit the big time. You've got Christian Bale. You've got Tom Hardy. Benedict Cumberbatch. And as you said, Michael Fassbender. All right, Fassbender is not English.
Can I take each of those in
Irish,
turn?
But
Christian Bale... took a long time to get to the point where you're talking.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, a long time.
Yeah, but Tom Hardy, like 35.
No, I'm not complaining. Like, but James McAvoy hasn't had as much time yet. Tom Hardy has been in 2 or 3 films. He's not. I mean, he's straight there.
He's been going for a long time.
Yeah, no, but
he was in that Star Trek Insurrection.
Yeah, no, but he's
very
okay,
good, isn't
it? He's suddenly okay. Great. He's different. And Benedict Cumberbatch has not. He's not been in hardly any American films. He's gone straight into Star Trek 2. So these are not...
Yeah, well,
we don't
we'll
even.
See,
yeah, we'll see whether he stands up to that. I still think McAvoy's got plenty in the engine. He'll fucking
do
the business.
No, but I'm not... Fine, I'd love to be proved wrong, because I always like to see good stuff. But all I'm saying is, you know, there are plenty of people in the same position as him that, when they get offered these massive roles, they rise to the occasion and they leave people going like, he should get a bloody Oscar for that. When's McAvoy ever done that? It's always just like, yep. That was all right. You know?
I think you're being far too harsh on McAvoy.
Well, I'm sorry about that.
Why? Because
I'm annoyed they cast him as Professor X in X-Men First Class. All right.
He's good in that.
No, they should have cast Cumberbatch because he even looks a bit like Patrick Stewart and it would have made so much more sense. And I'm still bitter about it. Anyway, whatever.
I'm not fussed about that. Okay, that's...
Next one.
Toy Story.
Oh, well... I mean, we've discussed that before on some level.
We did our old Pixar, remember? Back in the old days, we did our old Pixar?
We did.
Hey, what's your favourite? No.
I remember everyone getting excited about that and thinking, like, I don't like all this stupid computer animated 3D stuff. You know, I was still a fan of, like, the 2D animation things because that's what I grew up watching cartoons and I liked all the old Disney 2D stuff. So I just thought it was a gimmick. I literally thought this isn't going to catch on. And then I saw the film and obviously really, really loved it. I thought it was absolutely hilarious. And like, the characters were really, really likable and original.
Do you know what? I need to check. Maybe this is...
Did you just text me?
No, do you need to put your phone on silent?
No, I don't think so. I like the way it's making you look angry.
I just need to make sure this isn't Toy Story 2, because the side is slightly torn off.
Well, for God's sake, what are you ripping up your tickets for?
Well, I've looked.
Was that you going through a grunge phase?
It's not me ripping up my ticket. It's Toy Story 2.
Ah, okay.
So we can talk about whether that was...
The timeline is really interesting. The timeline of all of these seems way off.
Why did I see that in February? It came out...
Oh,
that
was probably the American... mixed these up?
No. It came out in November 1999. So, me
Toy Story 2?
Yeah.
What?
I know.
I can't believe that. My brain is completely addled.
That was America.
I thought that was like 2000.
Wait a minute.
Oh my God, what?
I just did the backwards maths.
Yeah, it's a year later.
No, I thought I was already at uni when that happened.
We were at uni.
I wasn't.
I was at uni then. Toy Story 2, this is. We got Toy Story 2. So, yeah, we say what you say about Toy Story 1. Toy Story 2, so you're all prepared.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're excited.
Well, again, I was like, well, no, all right, they're just doing a sequel for money, blah, blah, blah.
Well,
and then you go and see it, and you go, that was, you know, just, as far as I'm concerned, just as good.
Even better, really liked,
as I always do, Kelsey Grammer's performance.
I think
he's a really underrated actor, but... He was really, really good in that role. And he's very good at voice work, of course. And famously, he plays Silent Bob. Sideshow Bob.
It's probably better, though, isn't it, Toy Story 2 than the first one?
Maybe. Is it a bit less sort of schmaltzy? It's darker, somehow.
This is like Sid in the first one's quite dark.
Oh yeah, there's weird.
But there was always it was going to be one of the straight to video Disney churn them out sequels,
mm-hmm.
and that's how it was getting made, and then they just suddenly sort of went, hold on a minute, this is fucking brilliant.
These Pixar boys know what they're doing.
It's almost like then they kind of made it good, mm-hmm. or made it even better. But yeah, it's really nice, and it's a really good. It's a good Pixar, man.
Yeah, definitely. Obviously. And they've gone from strength to strength.
So, I saw The End of the Affair.
Oh, yeah.
This is 2 days before my birthday.
Right.
Have you read the Graham Greene novel of the same name?
What do you think?
I'm going to say no.
No, I'm afraid not.
You should. It's one of my favourite books.
Okay.
It's absolutely amazing. If you've ever fallen in love with the wrong woman and she's broken your heart like a whore... then it's probably one of the best.
When you said wrong woman, I pictured like this fat dinner lady with stubble on her chin, lying in an alleyway, bleeding out of her eyes.
Martha.
And me just being like, I don't care. Really. I don't talk about Martha. I told you not to use her name. I'm going to have to edit that out. Go on. If I've fallen in love or whatever that is.
Have you fallen in love with a wrong woman or any kind of entanglement like that? It's all there. You don't ever need to... I mean, you can read Richard Yates, but it's all there in The End of the Affair. Fantastic. And the film, how long ago? So that's 2000 and what is it now? 2013. That's 13 years ago. I only got around to reading the book 2 years ago.
Okay, fair enough.
The film at the time I quite enjoyed. I remember talking about how I saw the film and then years later read the book.
Right.
Quite like the film, but obviously the film doesn't come close to the book.
Mm-hmm.
And I read them backwards.
You read it backwards?
But Julianne Moore's in it, and Ralphie Fiennes is in it.
Uh-huh.
And it's very well put together. I wouldn't suggest anyone, if they were going to do anything, they should read the book.
Read the book.
Fucking A.
Yeah.
But people don't read books. Thickos.
How dare you?
Thickos!
Of course they do.
The Talented Mr. Ripley.
Ah.
See, I started watching good films in 2000.
What do you mean, started?
Well, 1999 was like bumper-to-bumper popcorn shite, just because that's all there was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But now it seems that more...
There was a lot of hype around that film, wasn't there, when it came out?
Ripley?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, no, it's a good film.
Yeah.
It really good.
Yeah. So, don't paint yourself as someone sneaking out to the picture house for a midnight showing of something no one's heard of. Everyone was going to see that film.
Oh, yeah, no.
You probably sat next to two chaps fingering.
Yeah, but it's very. I think it's kind of underrated.
Really?
Yeah, I do. I think people don't really talk about it that much anymore.
Maybe they've forgotten about it a bit.
Yeah, and certainly in the years following, people were sort of going, oh, it's not as good as everyone's saying.
Uh-huh.
And then that became the canon.
Right.
Well, fuck you. This is out of the canon. And I'm saying,
hey,
it's
yeah!
Fucking amazing.
We're back!
I'm too old for this.
Very, very good performances all round. You know, it's one of those kind of films that, you know, everyone's kind of a bit mesmerising in it. They draw you in, you know, with every word they say. And that's all too rare, especially with a cast that's that young.
Philip Seymour Hoffman popping up in a lovely little role.
He pops up. He plays a mole.
Matt Damon's fantastic in it, but Jude Law, really, that for me, he's so good in that.
Yeah, fucking A, man. I can't stand the guy, but I can't argue with you there.
Yeah, that's an absolute must recommend, a must see.
I'm sure everyone's seen that, haven't they?
I mean,
it's on TV, it's on Film 4 every day, if you're interested.
I don't think... Viewers, let us know. you haven't seen it, I know you haven't. Oh, this is an absolute fucking corker. Three Kings.
Ah, yes.
See, this is where good films were on.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I mean, that was still kind of it's still a sort of popcorn film, isn't it?
No, it's not pop. There's nothing popcorn about it.
Yeah, there's action in it and stuff. There's tension. There's
that doesn't make it popcorn.
I haven't seen Argo still, but I get the impression Argo is trying to be a similar sort of film on some level in terms of tone.
I'd say not. I've seen them both. I'd say Three Kings is far more sedate and interested in being kind of satirical about war. Argo's not satirical about... It's satirical about Hollywood.
Right, okay.
So that's not that interesting. Whereas Three Kings is... It's got such an amazing bleached out look to it.
Yeah.
And Spike Jonze is the kind of... He's a really great little comic relief. He's the fourth king. I wonder what happens to him. but yeah, that's when George Clooney really started coming into his own for me. He's like... Yeah. He'd bombed to fuck on Batman and Robin, and then he starts starring.
Which is that totally wasn't his fault either.
No,
it's a shame. But George Clooney's got the goods. And it wasn't until Oh Brother, Where Art Thou that came out that people really sat up and gave him the credit that he deserved. It's always been there.
Yeah, on a public sense. Yeah, but critically, I think people definitely took notice on Three Kings.
Mm-hmm.
He manages. He's charming, but also he's a rogue.
Ice Cube as well.
Ice Cube's not too bad. But yeah, I remember I watched ER when I was a lad.
Who fell in
love with Doug Ross, as played by George Clooney.
Well, we all fancied one of those guys, didn't we?
Just Doug Ross, no one else.
Mine was probably Noah Wyle. Is that how you can say his name?
Wiley? Noah Wyle?
Wiley. Oh, he was. Yes, he was.
The only sort of a bum note is Mark Wahlberg.
Oh, come on.
Breathing through his mouth so heavily.
He's really good.
He's all right in it. He doesn't kill it. But yeah, he's
perfect for that role. He makes himself perfect for it. He makes the role perfect for him.
Yeah, the kind of brainless grunt.
Yeah.
So yeah, it does make sense.
But he's got a very weird sort of understated charisma, Mark Wahlberg. And when he pulls it off, it works. And he can be so, in my opinion, so funny. Like Ted, we talked about, neither of us cared for that. But I thought he was funny in that.
Yeah.
You know, when he got the chance to be, he had a very nice, understated humour.
What film of his do you own? Would you watch again and again?
Well, Boogie Nights and also The Departed, which I know we've
had lots of words about.
But again, he's
just part of a... I mean, just this film is... He's the star. Like, Planet of the Apes, that's his movie. The Happening, that's his movie. Right? Do you watch these films? The Three Kings is not his movie. Boogie Nights is not his movie.
Yeah,
really.
It's
an ensemble.
No.
Oh, fuck you. You're not
he
putting
makes
that on...
It.
You're not... I'd like him, but
the more you watch Boogie Nights, the more the other performances like John C. Reilly and William H. Macy start to realise like how good they are. But the first time anyone watches that film, there's like a sort of perverse glee about following him and his story, and he takes himself so fucking seriously, and it's brilliant, but it's also so fucking seedy. And then when he just whaps that dick out, spoiler alert.
Whaps that dick out.
It's hilarious.
You know that song they sing, him and John C. Reilly?
Uh-huh.
That's from the Transformers movie, the animated movie.
Really?
Yeah, I was watching, when I was at university, they played that at one of the unions or whatever.
What a wild time you had.
Again, I should have been getting laid, as you so amusingly put it last episode.
Adam's annoyed because I won't tell him what that means.
Whatever that means, yeah.
I laid down every night.
But yeah, I watched the Transformers animated film, and that's one of the montages.
Brilliant.
They sing. It's a really good moment. Okay, never mind. That's excellent. Oh, this just gets better and better.
Brilliant. I'm getting really excited.
Just gonna say, The Insider.
Ridley Scott.
Michael Mann.
Oh, yeah, yeah, with...
Al Pacino.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Rusty Crowe. I haven't seen it, sorry. Oh, it's on my list, because obviously I love Michael Mann, so...
It's fantastic. Uh-huh. Really is. Rusty Crowe's is just...
Better than Heat?
Very different beasts. This is where you see Michael Mann is... He does... You know, when he makes different kinds of films, he can...
Well, he made that fucking Miami Vice film.
Yeah, exactly. When he churned Miami Vice out, but it's just guys with guns again. But mm-hmm. he can make, you know, his filmography is quite mixed. It's interesting the stuff he does, and Insider is just, I don't know how you make a film like that. Just it's about a whistleblower.
Yeah,
and it's just it's great, and probably the last great performance Al Pacino ever made.
Oh, come on, that can't be right.
I'm going to go out on a gun.
No, don't do it to yourself.
Come out of my mouth, those words, so I'm going to stick by them.
Don't do it to yourself.
I'm going
to
say...
Okay.
March, this is all in March, and it's just film after film after film, being John Malkovich.
Oh!
Yeah?
Oh!
We did a whole Spike Jonze...
Vatten.
Spike Jonze episode.
We did do. But, you know, So at that time, I mean, when I saw that in the cinema, again, that was one of the ones my mum took me to. She's going like, come on, come and see a cultured film.
Wow.
And I was like,
love your mum.
Whatever. Me too, man. I'd never seen anything like it in my life. And again, you see, it's that kind of thing that now people talk about, you know, lamenting the loss of it with the internet and stuff. But I didn't know what it was. I didn't know who the director was. I didn't know dick all about it. I hadn't seen a trailer for it. I just went to the cinema because someone took me to see it. And imagine seeing that when you've never seen a film like that before. Like, I was fucking... Like, it just blew my fucking head apart. It was brilliant. I just wanted to see it again as soon as possible.
Yeah, I'd read rumblings again. You know, I read about.
Is that the magazine you used to read rumblings? Norwich's premier cinema magazine.
I will not do.
You're a correspondent, Tim Croker. If you want to get in contact, please write to PO Box 107 Rumblings.
Info@rumblings.com.
Yeah. We're down on Crockery Way, down by the barn stall.
Honestly, they'll be at us with pitchforks.
Sorry.
I knew a bit about it, but yeah, of course. Though in those days, it was.
But how great is that to go in and just be like, "What's this?" And then you've got John Cusack talking about being a puppeteer. You've got Cameron Diaz, being unattractive. It was just like, "What the fuck is this?" And then the direction that it goes and the brazenness. With which it chooses to go in the direction. It's just like, how clever is that to be able to do that and not turn you off and have you go, this is like, you just buy everything.
I mean, I know it's really arbitrary to talk about film history sort of by decade.
Mm-hmm.
When people talk about the 60s, they don't actually mean 1960 to 1969. They sort of mean 1967 to sort of 73 or something. They do. I thought I did. Like the 60s is like it sort of ended when they say it's when like
the yeah. Well, yeah. In 1960, it was still the 50s, kind of. Is what you mean?
Yeah, like the 60s. As people talk about the 60s.
Yeah, it wasn't like the year change and then like the Beatles burst.
People say, "Well, flower power." fucking.
Who are you, Dickie Bird? We're the bloody Beatles. We've got these little bits of paper with pictures drawn on them. Stick them in your mouth and you see things.
Exactly. So, despite you laughing, I think what I'm saying.
Kind of. It just sounded fucking amazing the way you said that.
So, I was thinking, oh, we're in 2000 and we just got a series of, for me, vital, groundbreaking, important films mm-hmm. that they've been the high watermark and have been so influential. You know, you've got...
Well, don't give it away.
No, there's Three Kings, and I'd say, The Insider as well, and being John Malkovich already, and we're only in March.
Yeah, game changers.
Definitely,
but it's all, I mean, it's funny though, because of course we think that, because it's our lifespan, but I wonder what, like, a person of sort of 20, say, today, I wonder what they would say those films were for them.
Well, if they've watched
them, have the same attitude.
Well, they can watch them, like, but that's like a granddad gang. I wonder what you think of The Godfather.
But I think things have changed so much now.
I like The Godfather. It's a slower film. It looks great, and it's amazing. I don't go, oh, it's a load of fucking shit, because I don't get it. It's not about fucking drugs or whatever. I mean,
it is a bit.
Well, yeah, but, yeah, that's a side thing.
No, I know, but it's The Godfather appeals to anyone who bothers to sit down and watch it. I firmly believe that.
But that's the same with these films. It's the stand that applies.
No, I don't know.
Malkovich.
There's probably people out there that would be like, oh, just, if they watch Being John Malkovich, I think it was pretentious.
But yeah, but not just that. That's not an age thing. That would be people older and younger.
Not necessarily. Just people that just aren't people. Into all that quirkiness.
Well, yeah, you know, fuck them.
Really, fucking always worth watching again and again. If you haven't seen Adaptation, which has some amazing references to Being John Malkovich, I think it's an even better film from Kaufman there.
Yeah, check out episode 7 of Out of the Cannon. It's oft overlooked.
We talk about
Spike Jonze.
We do, but I can't urge that enough. Adaptation is a fucking, it's a powerhouse. It's his greatest work.
Yeah, well, we're not talking about that, are we? We're talking about Being John Malkovich. So,
lest we forget how good the basic humour is in that as well. I mean,
the scene
I always remember when he's talking to the secretary who can't hear him. I mean, the humour in that is just, it's fucking, it's instant classic cinema, like that. You never forget that.
He wrote for comedy shows.
Right.
That's where he started.
But, you know,
he's
like,
funny.
Synecdoche, New York is...
Synecdoche.
Whatever.
No, come on, say it.
Synecdoche.
Synecdoche.
That's how they pronounce it in the film.
It's a synecdoche. No, they don't.
Yeah, they do.
Do they?
Yeah.
I can't believe I fucking corrected you then.
Oh, that's right. Don't
Sorry, mate.
Synecdoche. Whatever.
Oh, because there's the place.
And the thing.
And then there's the word.
Yeah.
The player, they say he lives in Synecdoche, but there's a synecdoche is a... Anyway, go on, what do they say?
We all pronounce things in our own way. Stop punching me in the fucking ankle, that hurts. what was I going to say? Yeah, it's so, like, there is some humour in it, but it's very, very dry humour. It's usually just one person saying something that sounds a bit, like, wry and bizarre. But it still makes you chuckle. But ultimately, it's just this devastating, like, heartbreak film that doesn't lay off. And it even after the point where it should have ended, it still gives you half an hour of smashing you around the head with, like, this, like, despair.
I still like it,
but...
I don't know, I didn't feel smashed around the head. I thought the beginning with Catherine Keener, when he's with her, it's got some amazing humour in it. Moving on. Erin Brockovich.
Not seen it.
Oh,
Wild Horses Wouldn't Drag Me.
You see why? It's actually a really good film. Steven Soderbergh.
You just get off of him already.
I really like that guy.
Steven Soderbergh.
Now, there's a guy you can't pick what kind of films he makes. He really mixes it up.
Well, that's good, I guess. But
Erin
Brockovich.
Just because everyone loved it and Julia Roberts is in it.
Why is Julia Roberts in anything?
She's good in that. She's sassy.
When's she ever been good in anything?
Erin Brockovich.
Don't use that example.
What else has she been good in?
Yeah.
Mystic Pizza.
Was she in that?
I haven't even seen that.
Oh, come on. You must have seen that. That was always fucking
Never
on.
Seen it.
Okay.
Never seen it. Oh, it's a good game. What has Julia Roberts ever been good in? She's awful in the Ocean's 11 films. That's for sure.
That's a surprise.
She is generally... I can't bear her in Pretty Woman.
She lacks so much charisma. And I was talking as you like to always mention, Matter of Matt.
Oh, yeah.
I was talking to him yesterday about Jennifer Lawrence. And I was saying that, you know, what I think so wonderful about Jennifer Lawrence is... I don't know if it's because she's got an amazing agent or something.
I thought you were going to say someone else then.
Oh!
Hello, what agent?
Hello!
You said what?
Apart from everything else. But, you know, she's so incredibly attractive. And they don't... She doesn't play that down, or, you know, the films that she's in, they don't ever play that down. It's sort of played up, but she picks really, really good things to be in, and it's often roles where she just has fucking moxie, and she's just this intelligent, you know, smouldering, desirable character, but she's also very versatile.
Well, she's been
much in the way that Anne Hathaway is. Well, everyone has, but,
yeah.
like... I would say to him that I think like it's great that like she's almost like a modern day Julia Roberts now, but without the fact that she's shit and boring and unattractive, like, and is actually in good films. So I love that.
So
now,
no, so she's nothing like Julia Roberts.
I like that the hot story. Well, no, because she's the up and coming young actress that all eyes are on her in Hollywood now. But she's got, you know, something to give, and she's already. Even at this young age, got a really great body of work under her.
Again, I thought you were going to leave it. She's got a great body.
Oh!
I'm not joking.
Of course she has got a great body. I mean, if you want me to get nude.
No. No, she's the modern day...
I'll tell you what, though. Natalie Portman. In Silver Linings Playbook.
Leave it.
There's some lovely scenes of her in a leotard.
Stop it.
Come on.
Yeah, I know. We're joking.
But then Bradley Cooper walks on the screen and you just have to look down at your beer belly and feel sad. I've seen him in real life, actually, and he's not that handsome in real life. He just looks like a sort of chipmunk geek in an accountant's suit. But on film, yeah.
Yeah, so she is a modern-day something. She's not a modern-day Roberts. Robert, what's she been in? Yes, do you know what? I agree. She's not really been in anything.
I win, but Erin Brockovich... It's your favourite film.
Aaron Eckhart's in it. He's very good.
Stop telling me Aaron Eckhart's in the stuff. He doesn't make me like it.
He always pops up. Yeah. Your favourite, Harvey Dent.
Oh, great.
Very good.
My favourite.
Any Given Sunday.
Oh, I saw that.
2 days, I saw.
Remind me.
2 days after.
I think I saw that in the cinema.
Pacino. LL Cool J.
Yeah.
Jamie Foxx.
Yeah.
Dennis Quaid.
Yeah.
Oliver Stone directs. It's about American football.
That was it. Yeah. Retarded.
And the film?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I just thought it was a load of nonsense. Really overblown American... You know, it just doesn't appeal to people who grow up in, like, very sort of small town.
Well, it's about England. American football. I mean, it's interesting.
I know, but it takes itself so fucking seriously.
It sort of is. It's sort of a parody of it. Not a massive one.
Mm-hmm.
But it's quite... It's quite well made. Sean Puffy Coombs. is he in it? Actually, no, he was going to be in it. And I remember everyone was ripping it out of the film, going, "You're going to have Puff Daddy in your film, are you?" And he ended up not being in it. But then he was in Monsters Ball, and everyone said he was fucking amazing in it.
Wow!
So jokes on everyone else.
Yeah,
sure, Puff Daddy
For P. Diddy fans like yourself.
Well, if he can act, who gives a fuck if he's a dickhead or makes shit music?
Well said. Well, that's good. No, that sounded sarcastic. No, that's good. I like that.
Yeah.
So it would be funny if they put that on, the film post.
I kind of liked Any Given Sunday. I only saw it the once. There's some great speeches in it.
A bit like the Queen's Jubilee.
Yeah. There's some good... It's sort of good. It's all about the death of American football as it used to be, and about commercialism, advertising has kind of turned it into this awful beast. But the people who play it, they still play it with their heart and their soul.
Yeah. Oh man, I really care about that.
James Woods pops up. Right, Jeff's not buying. The Hurricane. Let me tell you about the Hurricane. That's all right.
Bob Dylan documentary.
The song is about the boxer.
Right.
The Hurricane.
Okay.
And the film is also about the same thing.
Oh, very nice.
So yeah, it's about this guy played by Denzel Washington.
Uh-huh.
A boxer who was fitted up for a murder, and he went down. He went down for it.
Oh.
It's all right. it's one of those kind of wrongly accused pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And there's people trying to... I think Liev Schreiber plays one of the lawyers who kind of discovered
the
case.
How old was he at that time?
He would have been a younger man.
He was 18, wouldn't he?
And they try and get him out, and it's about this kind of righting a wrong.
Okay.
But yeah, I think Spike Lee was annoyed because a white Jew made it.
Oh, they're the worst kind of Jew.
Not a black Jew. A white. Norman.
It's funny. I'll tell you what, it's hard to make Spike Lee annoyed, isn't it?
I know.
He must have really... You've annoyed Spike Lee now, you could at least apologise.
The implication I made there is that Spike Lee is anti-Semitic, and that is not the case. That's just me.
You're worried about
just
libel laws.
Just reading
though.
Out this letter in front of me that the lawyers told me to read. Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, It's like that film 24 or 20, the 25th hour. That whole angry speech. Tell them why we're laughing.
I just... No, because it's directed by Norman Jewison. That's what his name is.
Adam just showed me his phone with the IMDb page. It just said Norman Jewison. And there was a picture of a guy...
Yes, Lee
Who Shrews. Looked like... a salmon bagel with a little hat on it.
I like the fact that we can make these jokes because you're Jewish.
Yeah, you see, that's Jewish humour.
So yeah, there was kind of controversial. Also, people were saying, "Oh, yeah, he did actually do it after the film came out," and there was big Oscar buzz. Like Denzel Washington's great in it,
mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's just one of those very worthy kind of pictures. You haven't seen
it. But no one remembers.
Yeah.
Other than you.
Other than me, because I saw it. And if it comes on telly, I'd watch it. Whew, here we go. This gets better and better. Magnolia.
Oh, well, there we go.
I saw this on the same day.
Really?
I saw this on the same day as The Hurricane. I mean, I saw Hurricane at 1:30, and I saw in fucking Hemel Hempstead, and then I saw Magnolia at 8 o'clock in Wickham. That's how much I love film.
Yeah.
That's how much I
don't
shit.
Know if the viewers are getting the same impression I'm getting.
What?
No, nothing.
I mean, I just...
It's good.
I think.
You're all right now, aren't you? You've done well in life.
Fuck you. I found at the time, we can't talk about Magnolia too much because we did a whole episode of P.T. Anderson.
Yes.
I'd seen Hard Eight and I'd seen Boogie Nights,
mm-hmm.
and there was a lot of hype about Magnolia, and I did kind of struggle with the length of it at that age.
Yeah.
But I found a lot to like about it. And then, yeah, I didn't quite understand, but then I saw it 2 months ago again,
mm-hmm.
and, yeah, fucking knocked me out of my fucking pants.
Yeah. Well, see, it's a weird one, because... every time I've watched it, I've sort of focused on a different story arc as being my favourite one. And I also, the only thing I had a problem with initially that I really didn't like was when they all sing along to that Amy Mann song, which is, I love that song, and I don't even like Amy Mann, but it's a very, very good song. That annoyed me when they all do that. But then I saw it again, and it sort of didn't bother me at all. And then I've seen it, I think 3 other times. And the last time I watched it, it now annoys me again.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because I quite like how, whenever I think about film and music, when I'm walking in my day-to-day life and you listen to a song, and there's a song that particularly gets you for a moment in your life.
Yeah.
And you just sort of think, oh, in the film of my life, the film of my life.
If you were on working on a film, you'd be like, I'd love a scene where we just get to play this whole song.
Yeah.
Because it's so great. Yeah, absolutely.
And I've never seen it done. I don't think Magnolia nails it, but I like the intention, and I don't think it jars.
What do you think it is, though? Because I often wonder if it's... Is it meant to be that all those characters know that song?
No.
Because Amy Mann was kind of, at that point, she was like a sort of underground thing.
Mm.
That it's like people in the know knew about her. And it was sort of saying like that by pure coincidence, all these characters have discovered this singer that they like, and then they hear it on the radio or something, and they're all singing along, and it's just this weird coincidence. But when the guy dying of cancer starts singing along, I'm just like, I don't buy that he would wake up his morphine... drugs to sing along with it.
Yeah, but that's not it. The coked up girl listens to Amy Mann all the time. But it's a typical musical thing where people are just singing their emotions. And those they're all feeling the same emotions.
Right.
They're fucking feeling
love. But they're not. They're all feeling all these different versions of it.
Yeah, but that's a song can only sort of boil it down. That's what sort of kind of... It is boiled down, but it's also soaring and can mean anything. So they're all singing the same words, but they all mean something very... Well, not very, but slightly different. Mm. And that's why I kind of like it. And I think it works.
Well, maybe. I mean, maybe next time I watch it, I'll like it again. That's what I'm saying. But it is a very good film. I wouldn't change it. I just find that bit a bit difficult.
Can't you just put it in there? Yeah. It's like, yeah, I'm putting this in there. Fuck you.
It's really, really good. And also, I think not that hard. You could show that to a lot of different, audiences and they'd enjoy it, which I think is a really, really good thing, not to be downplayed. It's great now that he's moved away from that and is doing more avant-garde personal projects as well, which we've discussed, but, you know, but never forget that he's got that in him. And the same with Boogie Nights. He knows how the fuck to make a really, really good film, and it's sort of, he makes his own choices about what he wants that to be. He doesn't pander to anyone particularly, I don't think.
Mm.
And he can make completely different kinds of films with amazing... I mean, how do you learn how to do so many different strategies?
He watched film, he didn't go to film school.
I know, it's crazy though. I can understand him being able to make films like The Master and There Will Be Blood.
I can't understand
but
that.
Then
they're master.
Well, no, I know, but it's like, that's his thing. But then it's the fact that it's like, no, also he did, you know, things like Boogie Nights and Magnolia that are in a completely different vein. It's like, but he's really good at both of those.
Compare like another kind of multi-strand, different characters, different storyline film that I saw recently, Cloud Atlas to Magnolia.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's sort of laughable.
Well, it's trying to be a different thing, I suppose.
No, but yes. Yeah,
I guess another thing he's good at is casting, and that's ultimately what pulls it back in Magnolia. Like, it's that, I mean, having that amount of good performances in one film is worth watching just for that alone. Like, it's a whole awards ceremony in the fucking film. It's unbelievable.
Except Julianne Moore.
Except Julianne Moore.
But that's fine.
Whoa, again.
That's a long chat, isn't it?
Yeah.
We're still talking, but we're going to do a pause.
You saw too many films. That's the problem. You see too many of them.
Yeah, 2000 was a long year. So this is an interjection. That'll be the end of part one. Thanks for listening to part one. Part two will be following.
Don't thank them. They should be thanking us.
Well, yeah.
For making part one.
Yeah.
We might even put part two out there if we don't want to.
Yeah, beggars.
Yeah.
Beggars to listen to part two.
Care somebody.
Follow us on Twitter at Out of the Canon. Also, at some point, I've said this before, but it's definitely happening, I'm going to change the iTunes feed. So if you're at some point you don't get our episodes, resubscribe and you'll get them again.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, bye.
See you soon.
That's great.